T. A. Taking. O. Over. BTV. Yeah. Well, it's because Frank proposed we noticed, like, between 2 a.m. and 6 a.m., it's mainly the calendar, and half the time the calendar doesn't work, so right. It just gets stuck on one screen, or it's old stuff.
Yeah.
So he said, you know, we have over 170 shows of this show, Unlimited Possibilities. How about if we do, like, a best of and run them so that there's always something on BTV? So they went for it. So,
starting
in a couple of weeks, and Frank doesn't want a show to repeat, so he wants to just play a different show every night and just kind of
keep
them
going. Right.
Yeah. Here we are on Frank Moore Shaman's Den, live from Berkeley. Frank's guest, Dr. O, part two, where Dr. O tells us about his adventures at the RNC and more. So, on some some nights it'll be on some nights on BTV we start our programming at 10 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And so it'll go from 10 p.m. to like 6 a.m.
Oh, God. Excellent. Yeah, that's a shift.
Yeah. audience.
We have an audience.
Even when at the PER performances, there may not be very many people in the audience at the live performances.
Right.
And then we play them on BTV. And they're on our website, and a lot of people watch them on there.
Right.
But they get their main audience.
That's where they get the viewing.
On the TV and the website.
Right, instead of coming to the shows. Yeah. It's a little bit safer.
Yeah.
Nobody, Frank can ask you a question from on the other side of the screen.
Don't be E-T. Don't bet on that.
Don't bet on
that. Talking to the audience now. Yeah. Don't bet on that.
We'll get them someday, Frank.
S. So. You did S U R survive. You did survive the RNC.
Yeah, I did survive the RNC. Yeah, it's it was a learning experience. Every time I do any kind of protesting, there's always, oh, that's a good idea. I see somebody doing something. It's like, I got to start working on that. I remember on Friday there was this group that had protested at the DNC and then marched to the RNC in New York. Mm. And I don't know that these people were necessarily with that group, but they were in the parade that we all met at Central Park and then marched to Union Square. And there was this couple, and they were walking, you know, side by side, and then one of them would turn around and they would lock arms back to back, and one could see forward and the other one could see back. And so they were able to, like, completely maintain, like, what was going on around them.
Uh-huh.
I was like, oh, that's a good tactic. I got to, you know, gotta remember to try that out with some people and get, you know, spread the word amongst, like, the guy that I made contact with there had given me, I don't remember if I mentioned this last time, a tattoo with the legal hotline number, these temporary tattoos. Mm. And they don't cost much to make, you know, 1,000 of them or whatever. You'd print them up. And I was like, that's a great idea. You can just, that's so easy that people need legal hotline numbers at these protests. You just hand out these numbers and you just little water and you rub it on and it's good for a couple of days. And it's easier than writing it with the ink. Like, when I had been taking a Pier 57, it was like covered in oil. And the next day when I was in central processing and I got my lawyer's name and stuff and I'm like trying to write it down on a pen on my leg, but I'm so dirty, it just rubbing right back off. Unless I'm like, oh, this is not going to work. This I need something better. So you learn different tactics. You know, there's keep things moving.
Mm-hmm. How? Did you get to be a activist?
You know, I don't think I ever was not an activist. I've never been someone who was willing to put up with injustice in any form. I've walked off more. You have more work?
Your mom was R.A. Radical? No, R.A.I.S. Raised?
My mom raised me.
Your mom, did you say your mom was raised? Was raised in T?
Texas. Yeah, my mom was from Texas. She grew up in a small town. She lived on a farm outside of town. And during the night, she went to school, public school, you know, like, she was, like, in the 19, when was she born? Late 40s. So in the late 50s, early 60s, she was, you know, in elementary and middle school. So that was when integration happened. And this was in a small town in rural Texas. I mean, she retells a story of the worst beating she ever got in her life was they were in the main town, and there's a courthouse, and then all the businesses are in a square around the courthouse, and she saw this black child that was in her class, and she said hi to him in the street, and that was, she got the beating of her life for doing that, for saying hi to a black man on the streets. She was like the youngest of like 14 kids, but that's the, you know, what she dealt with.
Wow. How M how to M A how to make A R a radical? How to create a radical by doing something like that to somebody, beating them up for saying hi to a black kid.
Yeah, I don't know that I'd consider my mom a radical. I think my mom does her own thing, but she's not, you know, to a certain degree, she still leans towards, like, she's uncomfortable around people of different colors, like, in cultures. She's not, but that's how she was raised, and it's the fact that she's overcome so much of it is a big step.
Yeah.
And then the fact that neither me or my sister have any, like, a racist bone in our body. You know, obviously she didn't carry through what her mom was trying to teach her.
Right.
So.
She. C. A. Came. To. L. Los Angeles performance.
Yeah, she came to the LA show in the that Santa Monica one. Yeah. Yeah, she likes to know what I'm doing. She likes to see what I do. We're not that close. From, you know, we have long periods of time where we're not talking. Not that we're not talking. It's that we just don't talk because she works a schedule that gets her up at like 4 in the morning and then she goes to bed like at 7 or whatever, and my schedule's kind of inversed.
So
it's like, oh, I should call mom. Oh, it's 7 o'clock. At 8 o'clock, she's well into bed, so I'm not going to. So then I'll forget about it for a couple of weeks or something. So it's not an intentional thing. It just happens.
We L E left off when U F I finally got to bed.
Oh, okay, so the next morning, so when I finally got inside the apartment crashed out. Okay. Then I slept for a long period of time, and that unfortunately was the day of the direct actions. That was when I was in jail and I missed my meeting, so I didn't know where the group that I was working with were going to go or do. I had no idea. And I was so exhausted from lack of food and sleep and that I crashed out most of that day. I don't even remember... I mean, I remember eating, having a shower, eating, going into my friend's bedroom, and heading toward the bed. I don't actually remember getting to the bed, and I may have just said I'm close enough and dropped, because I woke up in the same position. I didn't even take my clothes off. I was still, after I'd showered and dressed again, I was in those clothes, and just, I think I was in the exact same position that I think I fell down in, and... I don't know how many hours later I got up. I don't think I got up until almost 11 p.m. that night.
Wow.
And then decided to go try to do jail support, which is being outside the jail for prisoners being released. Or maybe I went really early in that Wednesday morning. I know I was there Wednesday morning, so I think I got there around 6. I kept getting lost. That was my big problem.
Is F O foggy?
My memories are It's actually it's funny. It's not. It's foggy. They're foggy because it's like I did a lot of writing. Like I wanted to get my experiences down really quickly, so I did. A couple little quick essay type things for these news groups that I'm in. And then I headed back to do jail support. And then when we got there on Wednesday morning, I was talking to the people doing that. And the girl that had been there when I got out was telling me that the courts weren't open. They weren't released. They weren't processing people. And I was like, okay, that's interesting. They're keeping them locked up. I wonder if they're going to keep them locked up until Thursday, which was when Bush's speech was. And if they're not going through the courts, if they're not being arraigned, then they should be able to get out on writ of habeas corpus, which then the police just denied when they actually did get them, going, release our clients, and they were like, no, we're not releasing anybody.
Hmm.
So that's when the New York Supreme Courts came down and fined them for every protester however much money that, and that was just them moving money from one pocket to the other in the government. That's not it didn't really make anybody suffer. And it didn't get anything done any faster. It just makes it look like they've done something. But to fight injustice when they're not. So.
Right.
Yeah, so there was limited work. Then I went to a place called ABC No Rio, which is a food kitchen, and helped them prepare food. Because my court agreement was that I couldn't get rearrested. So I knew if I was at any more actions... than I would. I went to a couple union rallies. I know some union activist people, so I hung out with them.
But H E Hey U was not doing A C T action
when I was arrested.
Right.
Yeah, I wasn't. Yeah, I didn't.
You were just walking down the street.
I wasn't really worried about getting rearrested again, outside of the fact that it might take a really long for time for me to get another court appearance, or it was because I technically broke my agreement. How easily could I get another agreement? On the automatic dismissal. So once again, not knowing played against me. So that was the part of the learning experience. Figure these things out ahead of time. Like, now that I know what can happen, now I can plan for it. And I'm going to try to work with some attorneys and figure it out. Look, this is, you know, I do this. Now I need an attorney on retainer. Like, I don't want to wait around for
I've someone. Wondered how that works, because most people just use the hotline. Is that right?
Well, it's the National Lawyers Guild hotline, it's staffed by, like, law students and stuff. And they're the ones doing the work on behalf of, like, here in San Francisco, everyone stayed together after the March 20th protest. And they were the ones who were going into court when the city tried to, first they had dismissed everybody's charges, and then they got so much public pressure, they reinstated charges, but they tried to knock them down to citations so you couldn't get a trial, and everyone was like, no. So those lawyers were the ones that were going to court saying, no, you're denying these people their right to due process and fighting on our behalf. And they have a website, and I can't remember what it is. A terrible
website. Probably have it linked from lubber.org.
National Lawyers Guild. They have all kinds of information about who they are and what they do, and they're wonderful groups of people. So
that's how most people do it, and that seems to work okay, just having their hotline number.
Right. I haven't ever been charged with a felony, which would be a serious crime. So, you know, there's work that has to be done for those guys, too.
Right. Because we always wondered what you what if they came for us because of the stuff we do here with the lover and all that stuff. Yeah, we pretty much just kind of, we had a couple of attorneys on the show that were in bands, and we got their names and numbers that we keep in our wallets.
Oh, excellent, and,
yeah. Things like that, but I mean, if you really needed it, I don't know, you know. I keep the National Lawyers Guild number in my wallet, too.
Yeah, that's
Yeah, because I don't know if you really, you know, we're in a crunch if you just get their answering machine, you know what I mean? These other attorneys that we have, so.
Yeah, I mean, I only ever expect to be arrested when I'm doing political action sort of things, and it's just more that, like, having an attorney knowing specifically what I was doing and that it is my attorney and can come in and go.
Yeah.
You know, and have a legal plan.
Yeah. Is it possible to do something like that, though?
Sure. Yeah. There's plenty of civil rights attorneys out there.
Yeah.
And it's, anytime you're engaging in any form of civil disobedience, you have to weigh what penalties you might face, and are you willing to do that kind of time?
Right.
You know, most people seem to get, community service becomes the, if your case isn't, my cases have always been dismissed, or in the case with New York, I can't get rearrested technically.
How long?
For 6 months. Mm-hmm. So I can't be arrested in the state of New York for 6 months. But it probably won't be too difficult. But you know what? I didn't plan to be in New York necessarily originally. Right. You know, 6 months before that, but ultimately happened.
Know.
So yeah, something could come up, and I could be there. I'm really not worried about refacing those particular charges because they're trumped up anyways.
Right.
So.
Right. And as you, as Frank said, for people who didn't see it the first time, you were just walking down the street. Even
right.
though you were there to be involved in the protest, you didn't happen to be doing anything at that moment.
Right. It was literally they just blocked off that sidewalk and right. arrested everybody.
S. So. That. Could. Have. H. Happened. A. Again, right? Like what?
Yeah.
Right? Like you're saying. So I didn't go to any activities because I didn't want to be arrested.
Right.
But you could have been just walking down the street and gotten arrested
right. and
again.
I was out with some union activists. They had a rally and we'd been to it with them, and then we went out drinking afterwards, and then we all split up and we're going our own way. And I was like, okay, I need to go. Oh, God, I'm near Madison Square Garden. There's cops everywhere. I'm alone on the street. I've got my hash on it says Stop Bush. I've got, like, Direct Action Stop War banner on my bag. I am surrounded by cops every intersection I go for the next several
and
blocks.
And here I am trying not to get arrested.
And all I want to do is find a friggin' subway.
Hey. Taxi.
Yeah. Well, no. Yeah. But there was nothing. They had all the streets closed off. There was.
So there weren't even
I was just
taxis?
Suddenly like in this military zone. There's like here's a corner and there's a bunch of cops with machine guns and there's
oh,
just
God.
You know I was just like oh man which way's north which way how do I get out of here?
Wow. P O L I police S T state.
Yeah, it was it was definitely like walking around at a police state.
Is H here?
In the police state. Yeah, it's
the
definitely
police
here.
State is here.
Yeah. My friend was pointing out on she's on the subways there were cops all over the place and she's like these cops are never here. They're, you know, this is the only time in the past couple of weeks that she'd seen them have any presence in the subways at all. And she's been there for several months now. You know, she moved out in the middle of the summer, I think, like in June or July or earlier. Can't, maybe she moved in April. Hard to remember. But
yeah, but
she,
anyway,
yeah.
It's not a normal thing.
Right.
Yeah.
So yeah. But yeah, it's definitely a police state and it's not a good thing. It's not a
S. So what they want was to get people off the streets.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Because there you came there to be involved in all these activities, so they arrest you at the very beginning so that you pretty much can't be involved in
right
anything.
Well, when I was sitting in jail and it was, you know, creeping up on 30 some odd hours where I'm because there were people in there who were cooperating with them, having given their names and their IDs and everything else, and they were still there just as long, and I was wondering if are they going to just keep us until Thursday? You know, like I was kind of half surprised when I got taken in front of a judge because they never tell you where they're taking you. So, and then there were people, when I was finally on my final transfer before seeing the first judge, I was brought up to another series of cells, and there were people in there that had left my cell earlier that day, like by 11 hours ago. And I assumed they had been processed and would have been released, but they were still there, and I'm like, oh, maybe they're just housing us up here now and clearing out the bigger cells for when they're going to bring in more people tomorrow, because they know that was what was going to happen. So.
So their intention was to keep people off the streets.
Yeah, that's my opinion of what had happened at the Mouse Block on Sunday, was that the news media followed people over to the Broadway. They knew the Broadway actions were going to happen. So long as the news media were around, and once the delegates were in the place and all the protesters seemed to be dispersing, the cameras were off and the news media packed up and was going home, that's when the police started grabbing people so that there wouldn't be media coverage of them mass arresting. You know, people on the walking down the streets. So.
But. You. R D U dumb. It didn't keep them off the street, you know what you mean?
Well, they were, yeah, it's hard to say. I mean, like I said, I did go to any of the planning meetings. I don't live in New York. I was just there to kind of, like, help out wherever I could.
Right.
It's hard to say whether those people actually achieved their goals or didn't achieve their goals. There was a group that got into the security zone with some sort of, like, giant paper dragon and set it on fire, and that was, like, a big slap in the face to the cops that these guys were able to penetrate the security zone with such an object and set it on fire. Like, so how secure are they? You know, are you just because these guys are on the streets with machine guns? I mean, what good is it? Like,
what did you do to H help?
Well, at ABC No Rio, I cut up vegetables. It was, you know, preparing food to be fixed and served. I had gotten sick, actually, while there. So, not at ABC No Rio, while in jail.
Not at ABC No Rio.
I didn't get sick going to ABC No Rio. No, I got sick in jail. Now, they had signs about tuberculosis all over the jail, and by, like, Wednesday, Thursday, I was starting to develop, I felt like I wanted to cough. Like, there was something in my chest, and that's where tuberculosis is going to be. And I was like, oh, God. So I went to the wellness center and asked them about it, and they were like, well, you could get TB from just about anywhere in a big city. It's just not, at your age, it's not a life-threatening issue, you know, kind of thing. You just want to get checked out by your doctor when you can, or go to the city clinic and get checked out. So ultimately, I just decided to put it off until I got back here. Then by, like, say, Friday, I was running a fever. So I spent, like, a day and a half in bed.
Wow.
And then it just turned out to be a respiratory infection. Ultimately, it wasn't tuberculosis. I got tested and came back negative, so. But that was, you know, $20 and a trip to the doctor, you know. So. But I'm trying to think, did I do other things? Yeah, you know, outside of jail support, which is a lot of sitting around waiting, you know, just talking to people. And then being out on the streets, just as I'm traveling from point A to point B, having conversations with people. While I was on the subway at one point, this woman had gotten, like, I'm sitting in a chair, there's a woman next to me reading the New York Times, but she's reading the entertainment section. She's looking for a movie to go to or something. There was another woman, a guy sitting over on this side of me, and then this woman got on, and she had on her purse a bunch of, like, anti-Bush stickers and stuff. And this guy asked this other woman if she had gone to the protest. And she's like, oh, no, I don't do stuff like that. I think that's a waste of time or something like that. And he had asked her, well, who are you going to vote for or something like that? And she was like, I think she either said something. She was going to vote for Kerry, but she didn't like him. And I said, well, why don't you vote for Nader? And she's like, well, Nader won't win. And then this develops into a much larger conversation. Like, when this other woman decides she's going to be involved, and that if I vote for Nader, then I'm destroying a woman's right to choose. I'm thinking, God, why, you know, did you have another question?
No, he's okay. Grimacing.
Yeah, so, and I'm like, I would think if abortion is your single issue, then you would know that the attacks aren't coming from the federal level, they're coming at the state level. And what they're doing is economic harassment of these clinics, and they pass ordinances about building codes. And they change them so that then the clinics have to come in line with these new codes, and that costs them money to do these various renovations, and they just keep changing these codes all the time. So it basically it just gets to the point where you have to economically, you go, is it economically feasible to run this clinic here anymore? And if it's not, you shut it down and you pack up and you move on. And, you know, that's the government's policy. That's how they decided they were going to get rid of tobacco. It was basically economic harassment. They keep raising the taxes on it. But, you know, that industry still survives today, so. But I was just like, no, if they did outlaw abortion, I mean, I'd be people like me running the underground railroads that are, you know, smuggling people out to get abortions or to get to an area where you can have the clinic services. But... yeah, I can't vote on one issue. there's it's a much bigger picture.
The and how would the voting for
Nader
make it take away.
Well, it's that, like, if I'm making Bush win by voting for Nader instead of voting for Kerry. It's all like, well, the argument works both ways. It's like, well, why don't you support Nader? Because he's not going to take away the right to abortion either.
Right. Yes.
And.
Yes. And. So. And Nader is in F. A. Fact. S. U. Support A. Abortion rights. Kerry. Don't. B. E. Believe in abortion.
Oh, really? I didn't even know that about Kerry. I just never even looked at Kerry. So it's like I've written him off completely.
Right. He is a Catholic.
Oh, really?
That's what he was saying in the last debate, wasn't it? That but he did say he believes in a woman's right to choose, but he personally doesn't believe in abortion.
Right, and
that's
the saying goes. It's like you don't support abortion, don't have one. You know,
right.
If you're against it, don't get one.
Right. Nate, I don't believe in W.A. war. So, why do my taxes have to go toward financing wars?
Yeah. No, I've always...
Oh, when people say, I don't want my taxes to finance abortion. Well, we don't believe in war, so why should our taxes finance war?
Yeah, and it'd be nice, like, when I filled out my tax form, if I actually got to fill out the budget.
Right.
So this is where I want my... These are my dollars, and these are where I want them to go.
That is one of my platforms.
You want to hear Frank's platform?
Everybody gets to mark what they want their tax money to go for.
Yeah, it eliminates the debate. There's
what? P.E. What percentage of my money can go to, and then give them a list of things that money would get used for.
Yeah.
So you could put 0% for stuff, right?
Exactly. Give the president, like, you know, a pittance, mad money for himself. That's like, you can spend that on whatever project, like 10% of whatever gets collected goes to the president for whatever projects. The rest of it's only going to be spent how you would say you would want it spent. And, you know, no more budgets. No more of these locked up debates.
They just tally up all the money and the percentages, and then work things out from there. Was W.A.T. watching S.U. Susie Block? You were watching Susie Block last night? I and she B. L. A. Oh, she blacked out her screen. This is on BTV.
Okay.
This is the one of the shows we sponsor.
Right.
She would black out her screen and would have writing on it saying, you're watching a black screen because right now there's a woman's bare breast being shown.
Oh, really?
And then she would keep doing that and tell you what image you weren't getting to see and why it was being blacked out. And then this is what censorship looks like. And it, she, G, H, A, she had, Q, U, quotes. Right. She had quotes. Right. Gotta nudge my memory. One was K I N Martin Luther King. A quote of Martin Luther King Jr. Where he said civil disobedience, we don't cause the tension. Was that it? The tension? Right. We bring the tension that is already there into focus.
I can't remember if I had talked about this one guy that we'd met on the street on Friday during the DNC to RNC march. My friend got really nervous by the police presence. She, even at the park, when the march was getting ready to move, and the police were simply lining up because they were our escort. And she was getting, she's like, oh my God, they're lining up, the police are lining up. I'm like, that's not an attack line. They're lining up for whatever it is they're lining up. Because I don't know the schedule. I don't know what's going on either. But I'm like, they're not going to attack. They wouldn't. That's not a flanking position that they're in or anything. So I wasn't worried. But she was really nervous. She's not somebody who participates in this sort of stuff on a regular basis or ever until she was out with me in the streets in New York. But during the march, when she was with me in the streets, at one point she was just freaked out by being surrounded by all these cops, so she decided she'd get out of the march and be on the sidewalk. So we would just kind of make eye contact every couple of blocks to make sure that we were still in the same general area. But she got to have all kinds of conversations with people who didn't know what was going on, and she would explain it to them. Like, oh, they're doing it, and then people would be, oh, okay, well, I can wait for that, that's cool. You know, I'm glad to hear that they're out there doing it. And then other people would be really annoyed. But this one guy got really upset by the amount of money that was being spent, that we were causing the city to spend on escorting us. And we're like, we didn't ask them to be here. They don't have to, you know, we could have very easily not had them and marched in one lane and gotten here just fine. But he still felt it was our fault. That, you know, we're taking money away from city services. And I'm like, oh, we're not the ones that decide the budgets. So not our fault that the police are spending their money.
Right. In every DA, in everyday life, how can people, protest or take a stand? P, you put A, W, R, E, a wrench in the works?
Oh, there's so many ways. Wow, let me tell you, after, once the bombing in Afghanistan started, let me tell you how quickly my work productivity just plummeted.
How your what productivity?
My work productivity, the amount of work that I do at my job at the time, just stopped. I had absolutely no motivation to get anything done quickly. And
what kind of job was it?
It was an office job. It's information management for a small company. It was actually, I didn't even actually really have to stop working because the phones just stopped ringing, because what we dealt with were schools, and schools are the first thing to get their budgets whacked. And after 9/11, our phones stopped ringing. And I had arguments with the director of marketing. She felt our phones weren't working, and I was like, no, they are working. And so we'd perpetually be testing our lines because all these schools just, whatever money they had, they held on to because they didn't know what they were going to have to spend it on. And for a couple of weeks there, the phones were dead. And then slowly things started to pick back up again, but business was just like anywhere from like 50 to 80% on any given day was down that much.
Wow. And it stayed like that?
Oh, yeah. When I got laid off, like a year and a half later, or last April, we did like $4,000 in business that day on a day that we should have averaged $15,000 every day that week.
Wow.
And if the decision were mine, I would have laid me off a year ago. And I told the employers, I go, look, this isn't just a temporary thing. This is going to stay this way so long as this stuff goes on. But they're, oh no, things will pick up, things will get better. And I'm like, I don't think so. Mm. Not unless we want to make things better, but. But they're getting back to the question, what you can do in a monkey wrench, it all depends on your situation. You can only do so much, at any given time. Nobody's expected to carry the whole burden themselves. You can call every time that somebody gets killed. Can you imagine what would happen if every member of Congress had to hear about it from, 400 people every day called up, said, hey, another soldier got killed. Why? Explain to me why they're there getting killed. Why did you vote for this war? Because most of them did. Most of them, actually, what they did was violate the Constitution by advocating their responsibility to declare war. Congress never actually issued a declared war. They simply abdicated the authority to the president to declare war. And our system was set up not to give the president that power for a specific reason. And so, basically, they've given themselves, plausible deniability. I didn't do it. I didn't, but you did. Kerry is a war supporter, and even though now he's claiming to be against it, but he's not going to end the occupation.
W-H-I, which is how, what, B, Bush is you using against Kerry,
right. And that's why, I think it's funny, you have Bush going, look, he's no different than I am. It's like one of the few times that he's got a point where I can agree with him. They're like, wait a minute.
T-R-U, true.
I saw one quote where he was like, when the report that came out last week that said that Iraq never had weapons of mass destruction since 91, and even then they didn't have them. They had an idea to have them.
Right.
But, essentially all this is about thought crimes.
H-E-H-O hopes they... He could M-A make them some time in the future. Right, that's what they would say. Well, right. He
eventually might
sometime in the future he might want to make them.
Yeah, right. So it's And then to me, that you just get into the hypocritical double standard. Well, like, well, we have them, and we're the only nation that's ever used them, and we used them twice, and we definitely used them on civilian populations after the enemy was willing to surrender.
And we are PLA planning to use them
again.
Again.
Yeah. Right. And it's, you know, yeah, we're the threat. You know, if anyone's out there that's a threat, it's us. And it's time to scale those weapons back, you know, and just nuclear wars aren't survivable, period. It's just not going to happen. And no country, I just don't, no nation has the right to exist forever through threat of destroying the playground, essentially. You know, it's leveling everybody, killing everybody off. Governments should come and go as needed. And so I'm just against them. I've got no use for them. They're very expensive and they don't do anything.
These are the weapons.
Yeah, they're supposedly a deterrent. I'm like, you know what? There's lots of countries that don't have it and they don't get invaded and people don't fly planes into their buildings either. So.
Yes. It has nothing to do with
the security.
Security.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is ECO economics.
Yeah, I mean, General Electric is they're essentially our nuclear weapons company. If they got out of the business, the U.S. then wouldn't. It's like, oh wait, GE makes all the parts, you know. Mm-hmm. So that would put a big crimp in it. But so long as it's profitable for them to manufacture control boards and whatever other electronic devices are needed, then we're gonna keep pumping money into it. But yeah, it's a colossal waste. It's, you know, war's a dying business, and they're desperate to keep money coming in.
How? Oh, back to that question.
What other things? Generally, I always just tell people to spend less money. It just, you know, just cut down on your expenses. I mean, if it's made from plastic, it's made from oil. It's going to be here 100 years after you die. Do you really need it? Mm. Can you put off buying it for the next 5 years? tape changing or something.
Yeah.
You know, CDs, DVDs, it's all just entertainment fluff. I mean, you can find other ways to entertain yourselves. Alcohol, cigarettes, those are like the two like heaviestly taxed items out there, anything gas. When you start spending less, they make less money and they collect less money in taxes and all that feeds back up. Mm-hmm. So just spend less, consume less, and then that just helps everything out in general. I just want people to get organized more, and stop voting for Democrats. They're not helping you. They're not going to help you.
It's like when we watched the on C-SPAN, they had Ralph Nader for an hour just taking phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
Just about every single person that said they were voting for Kerry said that Nader speaks more to what they believe, but they're voting for Kerry.
Right.
I don't think there was one person who said that didn't say that.
Right. When you vote for
one guy said he was going to vote for Nader because he voted for.
Well, yeah. There were people that said they were going to vote for Nader, but the people that said they were going to vote for Kerry said that Nader was really the one who spoke more to what they believed.
Right. And.
So think about if all those people voted for Nader.
Would just go around and vote for Nader. It's like, look, you vote for evil, you're going to get evil. I don't care that it's the lesser evil.
Right. Someone SD No, S, A. Someone said 2 P to us. Carrie is A L a liar. Right, and she's voting for Carrie.
Yeah.
And she said, he is a liar. I know he's a liar, mm-hmm. but I think, you know, politicians need to be liars. And that's
yeah,
okay.
You sent this out. Yeah, I read this email when you sent that out. Like, yeah, God. Their people are confused.
Yeah,
just,
yeah.
Real, just,
yeah, and then she also said she was very depressed.
Yeah.
And we're thinking she's not putting all that together.
Yeah,
you know?
Maybe if you figure these two things out, maybe we'll find the key to get them both changed.
Yeah.
Get them.
Where is the B A S base? Oh, because the people just keep going lower. If you. If you think he is a liar, where is the base? Right.
Where they?
So you. What's so he anything got? He says could be a lie. So what is the? What is the base that you have with that person that you're supporting?
Right. It's just. I mean, it's still in this. I mean, still in this country, it's the Electoral College that's going to decide who gets to be president. It's not the popular vote. Which is why I tell people, it's like, it doesn't matter that you vote for Kerry or don't vote for Kerry. Just let the Democrat Party know you want people more like Nader and less like Kerry. Vote Nader. They're the ones who are going to read those numbers and think about it.
That will see H change things. The D, E, Democrats.
Will it change them?
He thinks it will.
Yeah.
If people started doing that.
Yeah, I think it would certainly get them to shake up. I mean, I firmly believe that they're the two heads on the same monster.
Right. Yes.
So I mean, I can't support them Anytime that I do support a Democrat idea, it's by coincidence. You know, and it's usually I'll have a different plan for achieving the same goal than they've got.
And don't think the A C T. I action has to be A B I big thing. Whatever action you take, don't feel like if it's not a big thing, and then it's not, you're not doing anything.
Yeah, no, it's the little chips away that'll make the. I mean, you can't cut down the tree; you trim out the roots. You know, that's how you bring that down. So yeah, every time you say no, I'm not going to make that drive, that helps a little bit.
Yes.
And
G H E hey D R I driving is 1 0 10 M I million
mile.
M I miles
an hour
on
the freeways.
On the freeways?
Yeah.
What is that?
It's a tactic to slow down the business. I mean, you really need. You're putting your life at risk doing that sort of thing. You know, if somebody's not going to be paying attention, we'll come in and slam into the back of you. But yeah, if people drove around slowly, I mean, it's. I keep telling people they need, like, office workers, because that's where most people work these days. And I'm like, you know, you don't have unions that represent each other, but get together and say, look, you know what? We've got a staff of, you know, X number of people. Let's get X, you know, like a percentage of that out of the office every Friday. Like, those people are just going to sick out. Mm-hmm. And it won't have to be the same ones over and over again. Just rotate it. Just start slowing things down in your office. Mm-hmm. And if there's retaliatory actions against those people, then the rest of them have to come up and step up to the plate for them and go, look, we're all going to walk out of here on Monday if you don't rescind these disciplinary actions. And but I'll lose my job. But hey, would you rather lose your life when someone flies a plane into the building?
And have you H-E heard of outsourcing?
Yeah.
Have you heard of outsourcing?
Yeah, people are definitely losing their jobs. But what people need to learn is solidarity. That by sticking together, they have a lot more power collectively. And they just need to stick together for their little one cause for this very short period of time. After that, they can go back to doing what they were doing before if they want. Or maybe they'll learn something and stay together. The police there, we were laughing at them for like they had been working without a contract for a couple of years at this point, I think. And they're working all this mandatory overtime because they're in a security zone. And when their contract does finally get negotiated, they're going to lose. They'll only get paid about like 60% of the money that they're owed. And I'm like, you guys had the best bargaining chip and you blew it with these protests. You guys could have said, no, we ain't going to work a minute of overtime. And then like most people don't realize during the whole O.J. Simpson thing, the LAPD were in contract negotiations. And the LAPD would shut down freeways for freeway chases. Like, they would inconvenience everybody to get that one guy that refused to pull over for a speeding ticket or whatever.
We should learn from that.
From the LAPD? Because that's how O.J. Simpson managed to make his escape and get onto the freeway and do everything else, because the police are all, whatever, you know, I'm not working so hard because I'm on a contract. And, you know, that's part of why that just got, like, so blotched that way. And then again, that's how people can affect change in there. You really need a lot, I mean, even in the office, it's just like, there's like, you know, the free democratic America that you live in when you're not at work. But there's that fascism that you live under at work. You have unelected leaders who decide everything with no input. I mean, it's like you live in two separate countries. We need to make our principles carry through to the workplace. Wouldn't it be nice if we had corporations that had elected CEOs?
Don't. Reasonable.
Don't be reasonable.
Yeah, that's what Frank has always said, that's what people feel like they have to be reasonable in situations, and that limits what they can get.
What actions can happen. Right.
But if you're willing to be unreasonable, which isn't really being unreasonable, but it's kind of stepping outside the line and pushing
and going,
for what you believe in.
Right. And we wouldn't have 8-hour work days if it weren't for like unions going, no, this is dumb. Our workers going, this is dumb, and forming unions that fought against it.
Which you could say was unreasonable.
Right.
That was unreasonable to do that.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
So no, it was a Boxer, I think. I'm pretty sure it's Boxer has this ad running now that says she wants to make health insurance tax deductible, and I'm like, yeah, but what if you don't make enough money to buy health insurance? It still doesn't cover me in any way, form, or fashion.
They're just not even thinking about the people below a certain income.
Right. It's.
They don't talk about the poor. That was the one thing that the point that Nader was making is that in any of the debates that nobody, they mention the middle class, but it's almost as if that's where the line stops.
Right.
Nobody ever addresses the people that are poor.
Right. Yeah, people are poor don't donate money. They don't have extra money to send the Democratic National Committee money or whoever, you know.
Yeah. R A D I Radical G Groups C O Come to Us. Is this about starting web stuff, and this is about the money or the numbers too, right? Well, we've had the experience of radical groups coming to us asking advice on how to get an internet, media thing going,
right?
And when we tell them how to do it cheap in a way that they could just do it, they don't, because they think that unless they're going to spend a lot of money and have this elusive large audience, and then it's not
worth
it
for them, right?
Yeah.
It's audiences that grow. That's the way I've always looked at it. It's more important to get the message out there than to,
or even if they don't grow, you're still reaching. You're still reaching the people you're reaching, and
right.
that kind of trickles out.
Exactly.
Yeah. If we thought that way, we would have never started Lover and never done any of the stuff we do.
Right.
We would We would stop. Stop. P. E. Performing. Right. In 25 years ago.
Yeah. Totally.
That way.
Yeah, there's enough people out there putting restrictions on you. You don't need to put them on yourself. You know, there's...
Right.
So...
Right.
No, everything I do, it's... All the little changes I make in my... Those are the changes that are going to change the world. It's the ones that individuals make in themselves. And so you don't have to worry about whether everyone else saw it or knows about it. When I was employed right after the bombing started in March, I cut my salary by $6,000. That's... You know, and I volunteered to do that, and my employers tried to talk me out of it. They're like, you're just hurting yourself. And I'm like, no. The government can't tax money I don't make. They can't collect, and I can't spend money at the local level that I don't have, and then they can't retax that again. So
you just had made enough money to be able to survive, you didn't have any extra money.
I sat down and figured out, here's what I spend on food, and here's what I spend on, and I didn't compromise my lifestyle. I still eat organic food that I buy at the little co-op up the street from my house. I mean, I even was still being able to collect comics.
Right.
Like, because it's really funny when you start trying to tinker with the numbers, because they take a different percentage out when you make different amounts of money. So getting it it was either like I either was making too little money or this extra kind of higher money than I wanted to. I couldn't get that exact zero balance at the end of the day that I wanted. But I had like an extra, $100 or $200 a month that I could spend wherever. But I, for the most part, was electing not to. So... And then when I got unemployed, it was like, okay, well, there goes the comic collecting. That's that was over with. But I still get to...
N-O. Now. That is... You. See what we're saying?
Yeah.
N-A. M un-American? That's un-American.
Yeah, to not spend money. Yeah, that's
yeah.
it. Yeah.
Make a lot of money and spend a lot of money.
Yeah, see, it's like, I've always had friends that are telling me, oh, you should be making like $60,000 a year for what you do. And I'm like, I don't believe in charging obscene amounts of money.
What happened with Mikey when... Back in the, I mean, now there isn't any work, but
yeah.
back in the time when there was a lot of graphic design work, we did the same thing.
Yeah.
We picked an hourly amount mm-hmm. that we needed to pay all our bills and have a little bit of extra money.
Mm-hmm.
And even though he could have charged at least double, if not triple that, you know.
Right, right.
And then when, you know, when things would go up in our expenses, we would like raise his hourly thing a little bit just to keep us at the same level of having enough money.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that seemed like totally easy to do, and it created an environment. We noticed the people that Mikey would work
for
his clients were happier. Because they didn't feel like they were getting gouged.
Right.
You know, it was like such a reasonable amount of money to charge, you know, and they got like a really good quality of work. They should have been paying more for it. Yeah, but it just made everybody more relaxed.
Right. And I mean, capitalism is just, you know, greed embodied as policy. And it's a juvenile trait. It's something you should, when you're civilized, when you become civilized, when you go from being an infant where you're completely uncivilized and they're taught how to do things. We don't try to get rid of that greed. We try to, you know, we keep it in the psyche.
Right.
And I'm all like, why? Why do we do this? Why? If food were free, would you really take, if there was like a food distribution center where you went and got food, would you really take more than you need?
Right.
I mean,
yeah. What would you do with it?
Yeah. It's just.
Yeah. Like, in.
He's helping.
Sasha, man, excuse us. Like in the 70s. Oh, the Diggers. Right. I was in a C community in Santa Fe, New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Where they had people, they had meals and food and clothes and everything where people could just come and take what they needed.
Yeah.
C A R Care. Cars. They even had cars. Oh, car R E P Repair.
A car repair.
Oh, they did car repair. Was that for free also? Wow. Yeah.
That anybody could bring their car in?
Yeah.
I know there's a place that has like a couple bike repair workshop things where you can bring in your bike and they'll teach you how to. They have all the tools and everything, and you get to learn from their experience or use their experience and fix your bike.
Yeah.
And for little or no cost. So.
It worked.
Yeah.
It worked. The thing in Santa Fe, you didn't have a thing of like. Everybody trying to take advantage.
Right.
It all worked.
Yeah. And that's what people have to do. It's just like you get together and work. I always have people traveling through various bands and whatever, and I just let them crash and take showers and do whatever, and they're all what do we owe you? Or it's like you don't owe me anything. This is one day I may be where you live and need a place to stay, and you're going to let me do it, right?
Yeah.
And it's like okay, yeah. So there you go. Next time you need somebody and needs a hand, give it to them. No.
That is where our P power is.
Mm-hmm. And in the community, and we're the majority. You know, we outnumber them.
Yeah.
But it's like everyone's kept fighting. You know, they keep us divided.
Right.
And
G R E E greed, greedy. Was it greed? Yeah. D R A I drains people.
The
he said greed
drains
people.
Yeah, it's. It's I found no redeeming qualities about it.
C L O S E close S closes O off P possibilities.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
Like I M A C R I I'm a Crip on S S I.
Yeah.
But I do all this. R E A reach a lot of people.
Right.
Right.
And yeah, it's like people, it's amazing what you can accomplish with just some flyers. I remember when I first moved into the mission, there was a guy who was putting up these destroy the yuppies cars kind of flyers. Like, you try to try and drive them out of the neighborhood kind of thing. And it was like one guy putting up these flyers. And he stirred up so much controversy that, like, the police were out looking for him. And I was like, wow, he's actually, it's not that he's affecting any positive change or doing anything, but it has an impact. He think people don't read flyers or do whatever. And I was like, no, he was reaching people. You know, I don't think he ever got anyone and actually sent any flyers, but he was out there trying it. And so I was like,
like A at the C O M at the community in Santa Fe at the B E at the beginning there was A G A N a gang of C H I N Chicanos U Y O U young G young guys who even B O M bombed the center.
Your community? Oh, wow. they decided they didn't like you, huh?
B-E, because they T-H-O, they thought we were getting, we were the E enemy.
Because they thought you were the enemy, yeah. And it's a matter of perception, too. It's
but they T U turned A. They turned around.
Oh, really? I'm sorry, and accepted you.
And S T started their own G R
their own group.
Group.
Wow.
W H I which F O L followed the C community C O P cops around.
Nepal, oh, they had a cop, like watch, a cop or, watch organization. Thing. Yeah.
Wow. And S T A started A C O M C O L no C O C C L I clinic.
And they started their own clinic? Wow, excellent.
And A F O food.
A food bank?
Food bank.
Wow. So they went from making bombs to helping people. It's a good thing.
Yeah. That is how things work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's like this guy on the bus, the guy that had started that conversation with the woman. He wanted to get involved. Like once he figured out that I was a guy that knew stuff, he was like, well, who do you talk to? Where do you get your information? I'm like, I get information from all over the place. And I gave him a couple website addresses, and I go, there's tons of groups out there. You have to get involved with the local group, basically, is what you really are looking to do. Figure out what it is you want to do, or where your skills are, or how you feel you can help, or what you want to do. And there's probably a group out there doing it. You just have to find them. But you have to put in the effort to look. There's lots of resources out on the web. If you're trying to, there was a group I met in there that was a radical librarians. And they,
yes.
And you know, they do what librarians do. They're librarians. They would do research. And if you want something researched and it's politically in line or whatever, you can contact them and they'll help you out. No, it's like that's what, you don't have to worry about like being turned into the FBI because you asked the wrong question or something. They're gonna keep it on the down low. Yeah. You know. And
we had heard one of them being interviewed one time, and they were saying it's like for the alternative press who uses them a lot too.
Right.
Because it's a way, like if they need some information, they contact this group and
yeah,
they
and
get it.
They're excellent. So it's just like everybody, like I had met one group at a training that I did that they were working. A lot of the people that they knew were advertising type people who made Coca-Cola ads and Gap jeans ads and whatever, and they wanted to help do billboard liberations. Like, they were going to do all the graphic design work, and then this other group that they were going to work with were the ones that were actually going to go out and put up the posters. But that was all, like, they were just trying to use the skill set without putting their lives, putting at risk losing their jobs or being arrested for doing, but working with a group to get the message out. So it's if everyone starts doing just a little bit here and there, and it'll all work around. You don't have to be the guy out on the street with the sign, but if you help make the sign, that's a great thing, you know.
Yeah. And don't F A fall for the L I
the lies
that it needs to be big in order to be effective.
No, I mean, after the first Gulf War, I decided that I was going to give up my car. I didn't want to have a car anymore. I wanted U.S. oil dependency to stop, and not having a car was the best way for me to help do that. So I started looking around. Where was I going to move to? Because in L.A., you have to have a car. Ultimately, I decided on the Bay Area, and I moved up here just to get rid of the car. I mean, also there were other positive things I liked about the Bay Area, but it was like New York, Seattle, here, a couple other places. Where was I going to go? And ultimately, just ended up being the Bay Area. So
that we about cars, yeah. I mean, we've pretty much figured out a way to not use a car very much. We have a car, but we don't use it hardly at all.
Right.
You know, we use it when we have to go to the doctor, you know. And when we do use it, we try to do everything within, like, a half a mile of our house.
Right.
And so that we're not using much gas and we're not out, you know.
Yeah, I try to, like, even when I mean, every now and then I have to have a car. About once, twice a year, I'll end up renting one for about a week or so.
Yeah.
But I try to get, like, everything done, like, all right, I've got a car today. Is there anything big that I needed to pick up somewhere? You know, like, try to get all this. Who do I know that might need a car? You know, like, can I help them out with something today while I've got this vehicle and some time?
There's so many ways to do things. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. G R O U groups it is C H E A cheaper, meaning like if you're part of a community,
yeah,
a collective.
Might. Yeah, there was right. I went to visit a friend in Arkansas, and there was a co-op, and I think they require that if you could work there. I'm trying to think how they. You got a little bit better pricing on everything when you work there because you were a part of the collective and you would work like 1 hour. You didn't have to have like the job you didn't have to have like an 8 hour, 40 hour a week job there. You just you had 1 hour a week that you worked or 2 hours or something, and that was how they maintained their buying power and stuff, was by being able to buy in these, because you for sure went back to use your discount essentially. And that worked out for them because it was a real small town. But they had a better buying power to get better prices for their groceries, which in turn turned around and helped the community out in general because they could buy more.
Wow. What about that? About anything? Is there any other points? That we want to cover that we've talked about. Yeah. Like, even at P E performances, the S M A small B U I building B U I L D builds even though performance is a small builds, are you talking about like small in terms of number of people? And that builds, you mean, into a larger number of people, or no, builds a community.
Builds community, yeah.
Builds community.
Right. There's so many people that I know that I work with now that I used to see at various events. It's like, that were small. And that's how I recognized them. I wasn't lost in a crowd of a million people. I was like, I saw that guy 3 weeks ago at this other show.
Right.
That's how, like, we always said the freaks in L.A. found each other. In Orange County, we're really spread out, but we found each other because we were always at these weird spots where something was going on that we were interested in. And it was like, oh, wow, these are all like-minded people. And then you slowly get to know each other and trust each other and start working together and towards bigger and better goals.
Yeah.
It's like I said, it's like, get involved. There's stuff out there going on. You just have to, you don't have to devote a lot of time and energy to anything. just give a little bit what you can. And if everybody gives a little, suddenly it's a lot. That's like how the taxes work. It's like you take a little bit from everybody, and then other people get helped out, in theory. That's the theory behind it. That's
far
how
from
it,
not now, but that's the way it's... Yeah.
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 The more gears, the more energy gets lost along the way.
Yeah.
So when you work with a group that's out there, like Food Not Bombs, that's out there feeding people, they're doing something, you know.
And the... They can know things will like FI food not bombs. No, is that it? Like food not bombs are E. F, effective, E, C, A, E, C, A, B, because that is why they try to shut them down.
Yeah.
Right.
It's
so they know that these little things are making a difference, and that's why they try to.
Yeah, with Food Not Bombs, like Food Not Bombs gets police harassment all the time, and it seems that to me what's going on is that by feeding the homeless, it encourages the homeless to stay in an area, or they always know where food's going to be distributed. And the police don't like that because the local businesses don't like it. It's not the police don't like it. The police just are doing what they're told to do. But the government's not addressing the real problem of why are these people homeless and hungry. And, you know, but there's no profit in feeding the poor, as it were. So,
like the B. L. A. Black
Panthers.
Black Panthers were not H. A. R. harassed because of their guns, but because of their food programs in the schools.
Right.
Yeah.
Totally. And it's it's those in power get nervous when we start showing them, like, going, look, there is a problem. You're not getting things done, so now we're doing it ourselves.
Right.
And, you know, I keep saying, if we did everything ourselves, we really wouldn't need them. I always wondered about my relationship with the government. Like I always hear people, big government's on my back. Well, how? What did they do to you? What is it? Because they're not, but they're out there spending my money in ways I don't like. You know, that's my problem with them. We're too isolated in this country. It seems like everyone's in their own little pocket, and you stay in a bubble. You're in a bubble. You're in your cubicle at work, and then you're in your bubble of your car, and you probably don't know who your neighbors are, and it's like, at what point do you? I have friends too, you know, somewhere. So
that's where all the fear comes from.
Yeah, it's the unknown, and it's just like get out there and figure it out. You know, it's not going to hurt you. Not everybody out there is evil.
It will get more and more
divided
R E V O L revolution. revolutionary? That revolutionary? The N E next F few years.
Yeah, it's during one point in the march, there was a point where I started chanting. I saw somebody carrying a Kerry sign, and I started chanting, "No to Bush, no to Kerry, revolution's necessary." And don't know who this woman was, but she had a little camcorder. She could have been an undercover cop, or she could have just been someone filming for whatever reason. But, boom, that camera came on to me. like she was just on me in a heartbeat. Like,
God.
So, but that could be what she wanted to, you know, maybe that was just what she wanted to hear. And that was like, there's a guy that's doing it. Like I said, revolutions don't have to be violent. They have to be a change of mind and a change of way, change in the way we do things. So, you know, like, was it here that I said it should be like the Renaissance, you know, it should be this revolution of ideas. Things are going to change. It's, there's a lot of tension pulling in a variety of directions. It's just like an earthquake. Everybody's, you know, a couple things are going on simultaneously. Some things are pushing, some things are pulling, but eventually something's going to give, and it's going to result in a change in the landscape. So, whether it's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. It's history will have to be the judge.
Right. S. T. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. Yeah. Stay. Yeah. It's. I'm starting to get enough people that I think together I might form a pool on when the revolution's going to happen. Like, everyone's all like, next 50 years, the U.S. isn't going to exist. And I got another guy's like, 20 years. So it's like, start putting people down on a little chart. Like, taking money.
D. E. Depends on who. On who. Is. E. Elected, how long it will take for the U.S. not to exist?
Yeah.
Is that what you mean, or for when the revolution? Okay,
yeah.
It depends on who's elected.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess
when the revolution will happen.
Yeah, Kerry will just kind of delay it for a little while. It might,
yes. Yes.
Yeah. But it'll happen. It's coming.
You heard that one guy on Lover talking and talking about how the perception is from outside the U.S. and the Arab nations to want Bush to get elected so that the U.S. will be destroyed sooner.
Then
because
later.
If Kerry gets elected, it will still be the U.S. empire
occupying Iraq
indefinitely.
Yeah.
But it will be sugar-coated, is what he said. Whereas if Bush gets elected, everything will just come to a head quicker and we can get rid of the U.S. empire quicker.
Right. And it's like the same thing with, people keep arguing thus the whole abortion thing with me every time, like, anytime I get into a political discussion with somebody, they always bring up the abortion thing, and I'm always like, you know, I kind of just wish that they would outlaw it, because then we'll see people out in the streets that go, okay, that's it, we're done. We're done with you guys.
Right.
You know, I want them to take off the kind mask of fascism and just, let's see that, see that man behind the mirror, you know,
right.
The curtain.
Right. We will S U R survive. We will survive.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the people. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not, you know, it's, yeah, I'm not worried about it. I'm sure we'll still all be here, or most of us, you know. It's there won't be any violence until they start shooting, you know. And it's going to come from the other direction. So, you know, I plan to be around. I plan.
Is that, that's a good line to end on? Okay, so Dr. O, part two.
Yeah.
And if you're interested in Dr. O, part one, go to the Shaman's Den Archives on LUVER.com. And this is Lover. Your player's going to stop. Hit play again.